that a great picture? You know, looking up, smiling. You know, if the Israelites had done that in their sojourning in the wilderness, they would have come out a lot quicker than 40 years.
Indeed.
It's something that we need to be paying attention to, because what is written down for us today are examples of what not to do and also of what to do. Those of Messiah, and I also put down here, not like ancient Israel did, because they're an example of what we should not do for the most part. Those in Messiah Yahshua are in a symbolic wilderness looking forward to the promised land, that is Yahweh's kingdom, even eternal life. Therefore, how are we to endure the weight and difficulties that sometimes arise, leaving symbolic Egypt? What was ancient Israel's attitude after leaving Egypt, and what is ours? It is not to be the same, as this message will bring out. Romans chapter 15 and verse 4. For whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, so that through perseverance and the encouragement of the scriptures, we might have hope. And we do have hope, more than this world has hope. And so we don't want to bring in the world with us. We want to bury that old person and its negative attitudes and, you know, things that are not conducive to this way of life. We are to endure as good soldiers in the body of Messiah. The days of unleavened bread are actually called the bread of affliction in Deuteronomy 16:3. So there is affliction that we will go through. But what we find as an example from ancient Israel is there unbelief and disobedience is to be avoided at all cost. Yahweh was discouraged by them and said all they had to do was listen and follow him. Psalm 81 in verse 13, if my people would only listen to me, if Israel would only follow my ways, we might as well capitalize the W, which I did. I did capitalize it there, but not on my notes. It's important to understand his ways are holy. And we are to be a holy people as he is holy. And so we're to do those things which he tells us to do and which he himself does. He rested on the seventh day, for example. We're also to rest on the seventh day. And it would go well if they had of, but you know, it will go well with us if we do. But Israel tested Yahweh 10 times. And we can go through those 10 times, starting from just before the start of the last day, the last high day of the days of unleavened bread, starting at night. I have a chart here, which is brought up in the Passover booklet. You're probably not going to be able to read that. So I'm going to go ahead and bring up a slide following this one, which will go over the details. But it's in this booklet, Passover, a Memorial for All Time. Right on the middle page. This is an updated booklet, so if you have the old one, it's in black and white, but basically the same information. Let's look at the details of the sojourning out, the 7 days. Beginning of the 15th, a great procession sojourned and fully left Egypt at night. Beginning of the 16th, ended up going to Sukkoth first. End of the 16th, they arrived at Etham. Day portion of the 17th, Moses' Sabbath message. Day portion of the 18th, Israel enters the wilderness. Beginning of the 19th, Pharaoh pursues Israel. As stubborn as he was, he just couldn't let go. Day portion of the 20th, camp at Pi-Hahiroth. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that all that correctly. But Pharaoh overtakes Israel. Beginning of the 21st, Israel goes through the Red Sea before daylight. And the day portion of the 21st, Israel is free of Egypt. They have the Song of Moses, and it's a time of rejoicing, no doubt. And we rejoice, having come out of the world, having come into the knowledge of the truth, that we recognize that the world is lacking. They have their way of doing things. Yahweh has his way of doing things, and we don't always understand some of the things that he does, but I think we're understanding more now than we ever have before. But the first testing of Yahweh is at the beginning of the 21st at the Red Sea. So we'll go ahead and go through these one by one. In Exodus 14, 11 through 12, then they said to Moses, "Is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, 'Leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." Oh, wine, wine, wine.
Instead of shining. Shine.
Instead of shining, they were whining. It's a lesson for us not to do what they did. We have brains. We can think about what we need to do and do them. How could they say this after seeing waters of Egypt turn to blood? We're not talking about just the Nile. We're talking about vessels of water. They were all turned to blood. They ended up having to dig along the Nile to find water. They had to dig for their water to be able to survive. There were frogs all over the place, insects. Some think they were gnats, some think lice. Insects could have been a combination. They were like the dust of the ground. They were all over the place. Maybe mosquitoes, that would have been a plague for sure. Flies, disease on cattle, boils on man and animals. But mind you, this didn't come on those in Goshen, the Israelites. But they recognize these things happen on Egypt. And so Yahweh made a distinction to show what is clean and what is unclean. Plants, barley and flax crops were destroyed. Even trees were shattered by the heavy hail that fell and the lightning, which evidently started numerous fires. Anything left that was later decimated by locusts. 3 days of thick darkness fell upon the land. It is palatable. And then the death of the firstborn of man and domesticated animals. Get out of here. We're all going to die. How could they say what they said? We want to go back? It's just amazing. But after they had crossed the Red Sea, they could then enjoy the last high day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But they still needed to trust Yahweh and walk by faith and not by sight. That's what we're called to do, to walk by faith and not by sight. A second testing of Yahweh was at Marah, which means bitter. Exodus 15, 22 through 26. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore it was named Marah. So the people grumbled at Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Then he cried out to Yahweh, and Yahweh showed him a tree, and he threw it in the waters, and the waters became sweet. There he made for them a statute and regulation, and there he tested them, and he said, "If you will give earnest heed to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim, and do what is right in his sight, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians. For I, Yahweh, am your healer." Yahweh Rapha. He is the one that we need to trust in. He is the one that we need to focus on. In the Bible study, we were asked the question, you know, what is the head or the most preeminent power? Well, it's ultimately Yahweh. And in 1 Corinthians 11 that was brought out, Paul said, "I don't want you to misunderstand. It's Yahweh and then the Messiah and then us." And it's in that order, and it's going to stay in that order. Though ultimately, if we overcome to the end, we can be with the Messiah and even be offered to sit with him on his throne. But he is still going to be the high priest over us, as priests, but we're qualifying for those positions right now. I am Yahweh, your healer. He provided for them, and yet another miracle, and provided what they needed with a little more instruction also as to what will produce even more blessings. So Yahweh's adding upon the miracles and the blessings that they received. But they have to do something. They have to do their part. They have to trust Yahweh. They have to believe he is who he is, and that he sent his son, and that we have the responsibility to walk in a straight and narrow way, a path that leads into eternal life. And we're told what path leads into eternal life. It's the path that Yahweh has set from the very beginning, that we might walk in it. But besides this, they got a taste of paradise, or at least an oasis in the desert, with the next passage, Exodus 15 and verse 27. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 date palms, and they camped there beside the waters. You know, dates are exceptionally sweet, almost too sweet for me. But, you know, to add to the sweet water that they have been provided, does Yahweh know what he's doing? Number three, the third testing, in the wilderness of sin. Exodus 16:1-3. Then they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month, after their departure from the land of Egypt, the whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by Yahweh's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Can you believe it? Sitting by pots of meat would have had a nice fragrance, along with freshly baked bread. Good memories, no doubt. But whether thirsty or hungry, Yahweh is able to provide. But the complaining is quite sad, given all that Yahweh had done for the people up to this point. To feed them, Yahweh gave them something that they had never seen before, manna from heaven. Manna literally means, what is it? So testing number four, the instructions concerning manna, a type of unleavened bread. Exodus 16:16-20. This is what Yahweh has commanded. Gather of it, every man, as much as he should eat. You should take an omer, a piece according to the number of persons each of you has in his tent. The sons of Israel did so, and some gathered much and some little when they measured it with an omer. He who had gathered much had no excess. He who had gathered little had no lack. Every man gathered as much as he should eat. Moses said to them, "Let no man leave any of it until morning." Now this was a test for them. Let no man leave any of it until morning. But they did not listen to Moses, and some left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and became foul, and Moses was angry with them. Not listening to Moses is the equivalent of not listening to Yahweh. You know, it's the law of Moses, but ultimately it is the law of Yahweh. The fifth test was concerning the instructions of the Sabbath. And we transition from the manna to the Sabbath here, Exodus 16:22-24. Now on the sixth day, when they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one, when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, then he said to them, "This is what Yahweh meant. Tomorrow is a Sabbath observance, a holy Sabbath to Yahweh. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over, put aside to be kept until morning." So they put it aside until morning, as Moses had ordered, and it did not become foul, nor was there any worm in it. You know, there's lessons. Yahweh is providing the people with lessons. If you don't do what I say, you're going to get stench from it. It's like picking up the end of one stick and getting the other automatically. There are consequences for not doing what Yahweh says. And to complain against him, or to complain maybe we don't think of it as complaining against him. Maybe we're complaining about a brother or a sister or another assembly or something that, you know, mumbling under our breath that someone has asked us to do, one of the elders or one of the deacons. Is that not complaining against Yahweh as well? So it's important that we understand just how serious this is. How serious is it? It's life and death. We should be joyful, and I think we are joyful coming out from the world, coming out from symbolic Egypt. And no doubt they would have rejoiced coming out and seeing those that were against them never again. You know, they saw them perish in the waters in which they passed through on dry land. The wind blew, the land became dry overnight. So they didn't even have to wet their feet or anything. You know, the priests, when they crossed the Jordan, they had to get their feet wet. But, you know, it was a show of faith. Yahweh, separated the waters there at the Jordan and allowed them to go across with the ark, and these things happen. We need to be able to walk across the street when it's appropriate to get to the other side, to be able to do the things that we need to do. Whatever Yahweh wants of us, that is what we should be doing. Exodus 16, verses 25 through 30. We still have to take the steps. Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to Yahweh. You will not find it in a field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day of the Sabbath there will be none. It came about on the seventh day that some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. Then Yahweh said to Moses, How long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? See, Yahweh has given you the Sabbath, therefore he gives you bread for 2 days on the sixth day. Remain every man in his place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. Yahweh had tested the people, but they failed, some of them. And it's really no different today. Some of us will fail, and we do fail at times. We have to brush ourselves off, you know, off and continue on. Or we walk away. That's also an option. And he'll let us. And we've seen some walk away. We don't want anyone to walk away. We want to see people succeed in following Yahweh. In putting in the past what is in the past. No longer, you know, bringing up the old person or the old ways of doing things. We've been given something new. We ourselves have become new, and we're to renew our minds on a daily basis as we consider the word, as we take actions to be in step with the Messiah, who never sinned against Yahweh, set the example for us. You know, they had the fire by night, they had the pillar of the cloud by day, you know, but they kept looking down. They kept looking back, the Israelites. We're to look up. We're to look forward. We have a hope that encourages us. We have truth and understanding and a spirit that will help us to overcome. But we have to make the decision to do so, and not grumble or complain or do things that are contrary to Yahweh's word. You know, we're given gifts. We're given gifts from Yahweh to be able to do what? To build up each other, to build up the temple that he has established with us as a dwelling place with him, for him to be with us. The sixth, you know, going against Yahweh, Rephidim, root meaning means to spread out or refresh. Exodus 17, this testing occurred 1-4. Then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Sin, according to the command of Yahweh, and camped at Rephidim. and there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore, the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test Yahweh?" But the people thirsted there for water, and they grumbled against Moses and said, "Why now have you brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" You can just hear the attitude and the anger behind their words. So Moses cried out to Yahweh, saying, "What shall I do with this people? A little more and they will stone me." One gets the sense here that the people had a short memory. Moses indicates here that they were getting angry enough to stone him. We read later that besides the water being provided from the rock, no less, the Amalekites were also sent to make war with them, no doubt to get some of their frustration out in a constructive way. Yahweh works in mysterious ways at times. Some time passes and they enter Horeb, the area of Mount Sinai, and Moses goes up to get the Ten Commandments on the mountain, but the people got tired of waiting yet again. Testing at Horeb, desolate region, desert. Exodus 32:7-10. Then Yahweh spoke to Moses, "Go down at once, for your people whom you brought up from the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a molten calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, 'This is your Elohim, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt.'" Yahweh said to Moses, "I have seen this people, and behold, they are an obstinate people. Now then, let me alone, that my anger may burn against them and that I may destroy them, and I will make of you a great nation." Was Yahweh kidding? Is Yahweh able to do that? He's able to do anything he wants. Yahweh's ready to start over at this point, even telling Moses, "Your people, whom you brought up from the land of Egypt." He was already disowning them. Could he do the same thing to us? Could he get frustrated with us? Could he get angry with us? Could he disown us? You don't want to test Yahweh. Exodus 32:25-28. Now when Moses saw that the people were out of control, you might add, they apparently lost their minds, for Aaron had let them get out of control to be a derision among their enemies. Then Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, "Whoever is for Yahweh, come to me." And all the sons of Levi gathered together to him. And he said to them, "Thus says Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, every man of you put his sword upon his thigh and go back and forth from gate to gate in the camp and kill every man his brother, every man his friend, every man his neighbor." So the sons of Levi did as Moses instructed, and about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. This became a deciding factor for bringing the Levites in to be the priesthood, because they were good with blades. And they also showed themselves dedicated to Yahweh above the rest of the people. It says all the Levites came, the sons of Levi. Another testing at Taberah, which means burning. Numbers 11:1-3. Now the people became like those who complain of adversity in the hearing of Yahweh, yet once again. And when Yahweh heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of Yahweh burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. And the people therefore cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to Yahweh, and the fire died out. So the name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of Yahweh burned among them. Do you see a progression here? Things are getting, a little bit more intense. You had the people deal with the dissenters and, those that were complaining. those that were doing wrong, and then he himself brings fire down from heaven. People saw that. You think that would have made an impression? They cried out to Yahweh. We're all dead if we don't get, well, they cried out to Moses, but ultimately unto Yahweh. But they recognized that they were in trouble. We can see the progression of Yahweh just not willing to put up with this nonsense of the people anymore. Thankfully, they cried out this time to Moses and interceded for them in prayer. This shows the people lacked a proper relationship with Yahweh, but so do their complaints. Number nine, the complaint of the rabble and the Israelites. This is probably where we get the term rabble-rousers. Numbers 11, verses 4 through 6. The rabble, this mixed multitude, foreigners, were they only Egyptians? Not sure. But who were among them, they had greedy desires. And also the sons of Israel wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish that we used to eat free in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic." You know, looking down. "But now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna." This is all about the flesh, isn't it? When we come here, are we talking about ourselves? Are we talking about Yahweh? Are we thinking about our daily problems and our daily needs and our daily wants? Or are we talking about this appointed time that we're here, this high day, and giving glory to Yahweh, praising Him, being joyful? He's brought us out of Egypt. We're no longer having to deal with those that were against us, necessarily. I mean, when we think of the progression and, you know, what had happened in the past, and ultimately Yahweh is able to make men around us be favorable towards us, just as he was able to make the Israelite or the Egyptians favorable towards the Israelites when they were going out, gave them gold, gave them, you know, the things that that they later used for the temple, and they had to melt things down. But even then, they were building fires that they were warned not to build fires, those type of fires that you know, they needed to smelt the you know, the metals, brass and gold and silver and all that. Instructions. Important. But when we look at this, we're dealing with the flesh. We're still dealing with it. We're not exempt from having to deal with this body of death. You know, who's going to save us from it? As the Apostle Paul said, "Thanks be to Messiah Yahshua." So we know that there's been a perfect sacrifice for us that's been given. We know that we've been given gifts. We know that we've been given Yahweh's Spirit to dwell with us, to help us, to strengthen us, that we might give joy to Yahweh by being joyful, not negative or complaining or backbiting or having, you know, strife and wickedness and these type of things, which, you know, Corinth was warned about. Test number 10. At Kadesh Barnea, meaning consecrated. Numbers 14, 1 through 6. "Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. All the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them," here we go again, "would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness?" Why? Well, wait a minute. Would that we had died in this wilderness? Well, they might get their, I think they do get their requests met here. Why is Yahweh bringing us into this land? To fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? You know, what a mess Egypt was left in. No doubt those that had greedy desires, you know, the rabble, that's why they came out. They saw greener pastures coming. Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Yeah, that's a great idea. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly and the congregation of the sons of Israel, Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. Moses, Aaron, Joshua, Caleb, they all had the right attitude. And they seem to be like the only ones that had the right attitude. It's a shame. I think we're doing a lot better today. I think we come before Yahweh with joy. I don't think we focus on ourselves to the extent that they were focusing on themselves. Does that mean that we don't have some work to do on ourselves? I think we have some work. I have some work on myself. I need to watch what I think about, what I do. I don't want to be a negative influence for any of you to discourage you. And if I'm negative about myself and about what's going on for me, and I share that with you, it kind of, instead of bringing light, I'm kind of bringing you down. So it's important for us to think about these things because of what had happened in the past is a lesson for us of what not to do. And there are lessons, of course, of what to do. And Moses, Aaron, Joshua, Caleb, having the right attitude at this point. I don't know what Aaron was thinking about making a golden calf or even being a part of that. It's like, yeah, and it just poof, and it just came out. Slap him silly. That's so nonsensical. Let's go to Numbers 14, 7 through 12. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If Yahweh is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against Yahweh, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and Yahweh is with us. Do not fear them. But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of Yahweh appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. Moses pleads for the people. Yahweh said to Moses, how long will this people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me? Despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst, I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than they. I bet that was a bit of a test for Moses. Moses was like, I wonder if he thought about that. You know what? Yeah, I'm tired of dealing with them too. Right. No, he went prostrate. He humbled himself. He was like unleavened bread before Yahweh. On behalf of them, he's giving intercessory prayer, and as like a priest would do, standing in the gap, trying to help them. So Moses wasn't kidding about the earlier attitude of the people being frustrated enough to want to stone him. Here they're saying they're going to stone him, but Yahweh's glory shows up. Yet there was a solution. The solution was to let everyone die off who was of the age of accountability, that is 20 years old and older. And they were essentially, those 20 years of old and older were essentially sentenced to death by Yahweh. They knew better. They should have known better. And Yahweh, had enough. Numbers 14, 22 through 23. Surely all the men who have seen my glory and my signs which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, shall by no means see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who spurn me see it. Okay? They have seen his glory, his signs which he performed, yet they put him to the test these 10 times. They have not listened to his voice. They spurn him. You know, like all sin, leads to death. Hebrews chapter 3, verses 12 through 17. Take care, brethren, that there not be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living Elohim. But encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Messiah, if we hold fast to the beginning of our assurance firm until the end. While it is said, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts, as when they provoked me. For who provoked him when they had heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt, led by Moses, and with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? This should make us stop and to think. Let's note what James said to all Israel and to us, so that we don't do as ancient Israel did. James 1, 1 through 4. James, a bondservant of Elohim and of the Master Yahshua the Messiah, to the 12 tribes who are dispersed abroad, greetings. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. You know, if we move forward with joy, trusting in Yahweh, we will not be like ancient Israel as complainers, but with belief that Yahweh is going to see us through with any difficulty we face. We'll have a smile on our face. We'll have joy within our hearts if we trust and obey. Romans 8, 5 through 39. Who will separate us from the love of Messiah? Well, certainly we can separate ourselves. But will tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? Just as it is written, for your sake we are being put to death all the day long. We are considered as sheep to be slaughtered. But in all these things, we are overwhelmingly conquerors through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing will be able to separate us from the love of Elohim, which is in Messiah Yahshua, our Master. As the messages of the Bible studies, as Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread have shown us, we can overcome, we can be humble, and be patient. We can be a humble and patient people with a positive outlook and hope in what Messiah has and is doing for us, even now being with us in the Spirit of Yahweh as we practice walking in the same Spirit and truth as he did. It should give us great joy, and I think it does. We're talking about those who were disobedient. We're just wanting to make sure that we're not in that same boat, because that boat will sink, and it will not be saved. 1 John 2, 28 through 29. Now, little children, abide in him, so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not shrink away from him in shame at his coming. If you know that he is righteous, You know that everyone also who practices righteousness is born of him. You know, ancient Israel mostly failed because they lacked faith and they focused on their flesh. But we are the ones now called out of symbolic Egypt who have faith and focus on the Spirit, walking in it, not fulfilling the lust of the flesh, but rather doing Yahweh's will. I entitled the message, Enduring the Wilderness, but maybe it should be thought of by us as being joyful in the wilderness. The opposite of complaining. Complaining doesn't do us any good, nor those around us, as it is often discouraging. We are to be building each other up, not tearing each other down. We are to look up, not down. We are to look forward and not back, as ancient Israel did. May Yahweh bless you. Hallelujah.